we didn't see each other for a few months. And I remember, and you're like, oh, I'm back in town. You want to go to a yoga class or something? I was like, yeah, sure. And then in that class, I remember it was like 20 women and Igor. And he had taken his shirt off. And I remember looking and he was doing some kind of yoga pose. And I was like, oh, and he was like all tanned and his back muscles were rippling. And I was like, and then I was like, no, he's your friend. You mustn't see him this way.
Some couples have like, it's all in the 0-1-2 zone. The interaction is very nice and soft and gentle. And then sometimes they explode. That's, I think, leads to a lot of resentment. Like, you don't address things. The fights become very big. For us, the alternative works, which is, we actually spend not that much time in zero because we're kind of always giving each other a bit of shit. So like 0-1 is even rare. This 4-5-ness is where we resolve a lot of conflict such that it never falls into the unaddressed and later kind of build up that leads to these big explosions.
I had never seen myself as potentially being a mother. It never appealed to me. I was, as a kid, it like literally repulsed me, the idea. Like, a lot of my female friends would have dolls and like they were very nurturing. And I was like, I hate dolls.
Wow.
Give me my toy plane and my toy car and let me smash the doll with them. One of the greatest gifts you've given me is you've just helped me become more rational in the like the highest sense of the word. You let me be as emotional and like weird and wild as I want. You make me feel as free as possible, but you at the same time teach me how to like understand myself.
In this third episode of Modern Relationships, I flew to Austin to sit down with Liv Bury and Igor Kurganov. Liv, known to many as the host of the Win-Win podcast, met Igor when they were both professional poker players. He later went on to co-found Raising for Effective Giving. Up ahead, we talk about how they transitioned from just friends to romantic partners, their philosophy on empowering each other's growth, playing games, and their approach to life decisions like having children.
So you guys are a couple that many of us admire. You guys have been together for what? How many years?
10 long years.
10 years. You are thought partners. You're collaborators. You make each other's lives better. You have an incredible, incredible marriage. Was it like that from day one? Tell us the story.
Was it like that from day one?
You want to say no, but it was. I can see that
you. I want to say no badly. Just because I'm annoyed at him right now. Just because we were running late.
At what age did you guys meet?
That. Huh?
At what age did you guys meet?
We met, we technically first interacted with each other at a poker tournament when I would have been 25 and he would have been 21. But I don't remember meeting him then, but he remembers meeting me.
Right.
Probably because
typical.
I was the only girl at the table. And I also then ended up winning the whole tournament. So
it's quite memorable.
Yeah.
Whereas yeah. I was one of 8 guys at the table when we sat there for a brief moment.
And then of 8 guys in a field of 1,200 mostly men.
So you were smitten and...
I actually just noticed, like, oh, cute girl in a poker event. That's rare. Interesting. And then she wins at the tournament. And I was like, wow, that's... let's see what she's about. But then we didn't connect for another year or so. And when we did, we became friends. So to answer your prior question, when we started dating, I was 25, you were 29. And we, at that point, had already been friends for about 2 years, like pretty close friends, living 10 minutes walk from each other in London. And so part of the reason why I think it was from the beginning already incredibly complimentary was that we really knew each other very well. Yeah. Like we had developed a true friendship on the basis of like getting along some topics and having like complimentary discussions on other topics, right?
Yeah. And so what was the convert? Was it clear that you were attracted to him or wanted to date him? How did you convert from friends to more?
For me, I did not see him in a sexual light at all until...
You were like repulsed.
Not repulsed, but he was just like almost immediately in the friend zone.
Yeah.
Which was interesting.
Immediately, yep.
For what it's worth, we were both...
Yeah, we're both dating other people.
Someone else at the time.
Right. And he was... I thought he was awesome.
Yeah.
But he was just like another one of my poker friends.
Yeah.
It wasn't until we were then both single for like a year that there started being any kind of vibe. And it's, we actually hadn't seen each other for a few months. And I think that's kind of what it took. We didn't see each other for a few months. And I remember you'd been traveling, like you're down in the Caribbean or something. And then you came back and you're like, oh, I'm back in town. You want to go to a yoga class or something? I was like, yeah, sure. You know, let's go catch up. And then in that class, I remember it was like, you know, 20 women and Igor. Classic Igor finding good ratios. And he had taken his shirt off. And I remember looking and he was doing some kind of yoga pose. And I was like, oh, and he was like all tanned and his back muscles were rippling. And I was like, and then I was like, no, he's your friend. You mustn't see him this way. But it was weird. It was like once that seed had been planted, I was like, oh. And then, from that moment onwards, it just felt like the vibe was like tangibly different.
Yeah.
There was like a set sort of chemistry there. You know, we'd always had the deepest like intellectual chemistry. But yeah, that was like kind of the first time. And then it's history.
And so what do you think you guys have learned about finding the right person that other people can learn from, or what either mistakes you see people make or things that people don't fully appreciate?
So I think the exact situation, I think, is not practically achievable for most people. The one where you are friends first, because most people realistically look for a dating partner, right? So it's not the case that you can just choose to, hey, I'm looking for dating partners who are willing to be friends first.
Yeah.
It's just not going to work that way. So that part, unfortunately, is not relatable. I also wouldn't recommend to just like among your friends try to like change relationships necessarily. I think a thing that people do make wrong, like make a mistake about, is the part that works, that is most important for our relationship, is communication, and that works incredibly well. And I think selecting someone who has similar desires for styles of communication is probably the thing that I would put at the very high list, which includes, like, for example, we just address everything very directly and honestly and sometimes aggressively with each other. Someone else might, and I think that is better for us. I even think that may be better if like others did it or whatever. But I think as long as both just want the same thing, some other people have a preference for kind of resolving everything within yourself first and only ever discussing things aggressively with a partner, like very rarely or something. I think that leads to bottling up, but it can work for others, right? So, but if you have one partner wanting to resolve it for yourself and the other one wanting to address everything directly, that's just so hard. And I've seen relationships fail on that basis. So I think like whatever it is, at least like be complementary in that kind of, or not complementary, but actually matching in that dimension is very important.
Yeah, the first couple we had on, Nadia and Delian, they were saying somewhat the opposite, which is a lot of what they do is let things go. Like don't feel the need to bring up every single thing or work through everything, and just kind of like trust that it'll work itself out.
That makes total sense. And I imagine both agreed with that approach. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's my only claim, that as long as both agree with the approach, things can work very, very well.
Yeah. It's just, you don't want to be trying to live with someone who has a completely different conflict resolution style.
Yeah.
You need to be complementary in that regard.
Because both are justified in their desire to have it kind of sometimes their own way. And the amount of kind of give you have to give each time to do the other way, which the person then also justifiably thinks is not right or not fair on them or whatever. It's just so much friction on that basis.
Right. Because life is going to throw a ton of conflicts at you anyway. Right.
Yeah.
You don't want to add on top of that the like conflicts about the way you deal with conflict.
Yeah.
That's just an extra layer of bullshit that you're going to have to deal with. So you want to minimize that as much from the outset. Just going back to the previous thing of the advice for people getting together or like trying to find their life partner. Now, I've not been a man, so I can't speak for what it's like for men in attraction, but I was thinking about this some more because like a lot of women, what are you laughing?
Sorry.
What?
I'm just happy that you've answered the burning question on the audience's desire on whether or not you have been a man before.
I just think I'm good at putting myself in the shoes of both men and women.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I
mean, you had to.
I have to. My job. Yeah.
Thousands of men trying to
mentally model, like psychologically profile them, and like empathize.
Do you think
them,
that made you more of a man over time?
I mean, I don't know. I'm probably more masculine than most women.
But did you become more masculine by putting yourself into the shoes of men the entire
time? I don't know. I was pretty masculine from a young age.
Do you think you're more feminine than...
Yeah, good question.
Well, I've
but there's very
also
few women.
Sat in front of men, so that doesn't apply.
You're pretty good at modeling women as well, though, I'd say. You're better than average.
Yeah.
Anyway, shut up. Let me get my point out. I think a lot of people think that... It, this idea of like friend zoning, I think is actually a very real issue. And particularly for women, is that once they put, there is this concern that once you put a man into the friend zone, it's kind of hard to get him out. And had I not had, things not going the right way, and it would have been a real tragedy if it turned out that I had like friend zoned Igor and it stayed that way. You know, I would have missed out on this. But it was truly just like he wasn't my classical type in the beginning. And I saw someone recently, a very, very incredibly smart, accomplished woman who works in the tech space in San Francisco. She's about as eligible as it gets. She's also very sexy. And she's like, oh, I'm just going to be perpetually single because it's just like I just don't have time to find, there's so many eligible men out there that I just don't have time to sift through them all. So how am I going to find my life partner? And I wanted to say to her, I was like, you're already exposed to probably like, I bet in your friendship group, there are a bunch of amazing guys who you've already let, because they've become your friends. But because maybe it's something like a foible of the female brain or something, but I bet because you've already friend zoned them, you're just excluding them. And maybe your actual best partner is right under your nose because they've already gone through that selection of, process. So yeah, I guess my point is just like, take a second look at maybe some of the guys that you friend zoned, and maybe this applies to men as well. Maybe the women that you friend zoned, although I think with men, it's a little bit less the case because men will just often, they're less discriminating when it comes to
men. Don't do a ton of friend zoning.
No, they'll bang anyone they can, not bang anyone, but they're more open they're more open-minded to having sex with someone of the opposite sex.
It's a positive way of putting it.
Yes. Trying to be diplomatic.
Men are very open-minded when it comes to that.
Yeah.
Really
one of the great qualities.
Like I just had this like big struggle and for a while of like, oh, but I don't know if I wanted to take our relationship physical because it's going to ruin this nice thing. You're like, you're my best friend, and it's like, well, duh. You're like, why don't you just be romantically involved with your best friend? That's my one little thing I wanted to say.
Interesting. I just want to add, so yes. It makes sense that it's hard to change the friend zoning. Seems like in your case, it was one, a break was required, like where we didn't see each other for a couple of months. I was traveling. And then in the meantime, I got fitter and then put myself in an environment with 20 women and zero other men. And then you were like, well, that's the one.
No, it was more than that, though. I don't know.
No, we already were a good fit, obviously. But
did what you were looking for evolve over time, or did your criteria sort of... Or did you even think of having a criteria, or were you just like meeting people and seeing what?
I'd never really like consciously gone, this is the type of guy I want. Right. It'd never been a really strategic, conscious process. It was more just like...
Were people you dated before similar to?
Were they Jewish?
I think that's your interesting defining feature. No, I mean, I for a while I had a very physical type when I was younger. Like it was interesting. Young Liv was very much just like looking at physicality because I didn't really know what personality types were and what I didn't know myself well enough to know what personalities I liked. I just knew that I liked a certain aesthetic of guy who's usually like rocker dude, big muscles, long hair, big, strong, kind of good at guitar.
Well, he's got long hair.
Yes.
Didn't at the time, actually.
No, he had short hair.
She manipulated me into
molded you.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, and you were like sort of like more skinny, and it was just like that was it, you didn't fit my physical type that I normally liked. But as I got older and dated different types of people, and then I went through a period of like, no, I'm only going to date poker players because that makes sense. I'm on the poker circuit, and tastes got more like I started to know myself better. I started to know more what the potential partner I would like would be. I mean, I don't know what your experience was, though.
What was my experience? I had my previous girlfriend was definitely very different to you in terms of character and aesthetic, medium different in terms of aesthetic. And I don't know. You're kind of open. I just love your personality and go-getterness and humor and looks and everything. It was a pretty big yes. Yeah, eventually.
Wow.
We'll get right back to the conversation after a word from our sponsors. Modern Relationships is sponsored by Relationship Hero, your personal relationship coach. It's an open secret in Silicon Valley that people are using these relationship coaches. Over 100,000 users are happy they tried Relationship Hero. You might be wondering, what is it like to talk to a relationship coach? Well, here's Jackie Pugh, a senior coach at Relationship Hero.
That's a really good question. Okay, I actually just got off a call with a client who was getting mixed signals from his ex. So she's the one that broke up with him, but then she kept sending him these really heartfelt, long emotional messages at midnight, and then in the morning would act like nothing ever happened.
We've all been there. How do you recommend handling something like that?
So what we would do is we would want to hear exactly what's going on so we can help discern, is my client's ex, is she just trying to process her emotions and she's doing it via text message? Is she potentially trying to keep my client on the back burner? Or is she actually trying to reconnect? And if she is, then I help my client decide, you know, is this something that he actually wants to do, reconnect? And if so, why?
Thanks, Jackie. If you want to try your first one-on-one or couples coaching session, go to relationshiphero.com/modern. You'll get $50 off your first session if you use our link. Again, that's relationshiphero.com/modern.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned humor. Humor is like so key, I think. If you, again, like, when it comes to conflict resolution, humor is one of the best ways of doing it. So if you both have a similar sense of humor, if you both find the same shit funny, that's doing so much of the heavy lifting. And so often, like, yeah, I mean, we still have plenty of disagreements. And
even though, again, I think humor is best for that stuff. But if both agree, that works. I think both can also agree that something else is good. I'm sure in California, there are plenty of people who would rather like hold space for each other in these moments or something. And that's as long as both.
Hugo has a whole thing about holding space.
As long as both
hold space for each other in these moments.
Happy
wow.
With holding space.
It's,
what are we
he doesn't
about
actually,
here?
Yeah, go on, explain what you mean.
This is an inside joke between you guys.
Yes.
No, I just mean that there are other ways to resolve conflicts outside of humor.
You need to give some more context. You've just said California and holding space. People are going to be so confused.
I think it's pretty self-evident. You just kind of sit there and are like,
He means he doesn't like the aesthetic of the, like, perhaps is often, you know, part of the like California consciousness community where people are like, we're going to sit here and just hold space and in like a sort of soft voice.
Yeah.
In practicality, you actually do like holding space.
I actually meant it very genuinely. If it works for both, then it is a very viable way to resolve conflict. I mean it entirely genuinely.
So it's more like an aesthetic match. It's a stylistic
For me,
match.
It doesn't work because I want to like talk about it or just, I don't know.
But you, you recognize there are times where sometimes I'm really pissed off about something and I'm like in a heightened emotional state. You don't always, I mean, sometimes you do, but like, you don't always like push through and be like, we must resolve this now. You give me some time to cool down a little bit.
Yeah, and frankly, that is a form of holding space.
Exactly.
Even though it's the extreme version of it is funny and ridiculous when it gets there, but so many people went there in part because there is also some like real value in this concept and like this behavior, I think.
And so you guys basically just fight like this all the time. I'm teasing. You're like very direct with each other.
Yeah, we're so in it in our style that we don't even realize that we're quite combative with one another. But when like people, I mean, again, friends who know us really well would come to stay. They're like, oh, mom and dad are fighting again. And it's like, oh, this is my comfort zone.
Yeah.
You know, they're like so used to it. It's like, it's weird. If we're being extra nicey nice to each other all the time, they'll be like, what's going on?
Right.
You know, we have this concept, you call it dumbbell theory. Mm-hmm. Can I explain it?
You want to explain my question? Sure.
Go on, explain your theory.
So if you were to map out how frequently the type of interaction occurs on the y-axis and on the x-axis, like how intense it is from 0 to 10, and some couples just have like different distribution of how they interact with each other. Some couples have like, it's all in the 0-1-2 zone where it's like zero being the interaction is very nice and soft and gentle, and 10 being like 10 max aggressive. Like, so like many fighting. Couples actually spend most of their time in like 0-1-2. It's all like nice and nice. You don't even address it. You maybe step away from it. And then sometimes they explode with so it's like this, like a dumbbell, right? And that's, I think, leads to a lot of resentment. Like, if you don't address things, the fights become very big. The nines and tens are actually very bad. People do things they regret, etc. I think that's a bad approach. The approach that, or at least it's a bad approach for us, because for us, the alternative works, which is we actually spend not that much time in zero because we're kind of always giving each other a bit of shit. So like 0-1 is even rare. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and basically no 7, 8, 9, 10. In terms of intensity. And this 4-5-ness is where we resolve a lot of conflict such that it never falls into the unaddressed and later kind of build up and potential resentment zone that leads to these big explosions. And yeah, for us, it works really well. It from the outside can look like, oh, we're fighting, but it's like, no, it's just, I don't know, our style of communication. But the advantage of that is, yeah, that I think we basically it happens like once per half year that we don't address something for multiple days that was on someone's mind. It still happens that it's like, oh yeah, there was this thing that was annoying and I wasn't able to say it, but it happens like for a week, maybe once a year.
Right. We just don't really have any taboo topics anymore. And I think that's an interesting thing.
I mean, not just taboo. It's more that...
It's like avoid, that topic, I can't bring it up because it's just, there's too much drama. And
yeah, too much baggage around it or something. There's just no baggage formed if you go with this other approach of kind of like more frequently having mild disagreements and discussions that you do. But they also need to be seen as not... like it needs to be constructive bickering basically rather than just venting your displeasure at some outside event onto your partner. That's not the type of 4 or 5 that I'm referring to. I literally mean, like, if say I was late on the way here and then
in that hypothetical
Liv would immediately point it out and make immediately actually a reference to some general phenomenon or like behavior type maybe that I have, the typical thing that you're meant to not do, right? Like, you should make it about the concrete situation rather than generalize and say you never, you always, etc. In any case, she would in such a situation, and I would respond to that, and now I actually have a conversation about it, but it would be constructive, even though it would be a bit bickery.
But it seems like you guys also get entertained by each other sort of being mildly frustrated.
We get entertained by, yes, we're quite like, if one of us,
I think that's the 2-3 zone kind of,
yeah,
like right now what a couple times what you've seen, like that's still the 4-5 zone is more where you're actually like, no, da, 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 da. But we then in the moment, it's like the 4-5 out of 10 in aggressiveness is actually a 4-5. It doesn't have that much entertainment. But then 30 minutes after or so, or like, then entertainment comes in.
Like, one thing we don't do is like keep a grudge.
Yeah.
Like, I got really angry with you like just around Christmas over a thing. And even that, I just was like,
I remember that.
The vape.
Oh,
when it turns out you've been vaping. I really hate vaping. And it had been been away. And I got really mad about it.
Right. That was the maddest you've gotten
In a long
in the
time.
Entire year. You really, really wanted to cap off 2024 with...
I was furious. Like,
I could do one better than I have in the entire year.
But even that was like... I was mad for like 24 hours. Not even.
Less.
Less. I woke up in the morning and I was just like, ugh. I mean... Right. But I got my point across.
And do you get over things better because you've let it out, fully express the feeling? Or
I think so. I feel safe to completely let my... I have stronger emotions than Igor. That's just like a known thing. And you do give me safe space to express them. And I think it's better if I just get it out. And then it's just that, like, there is no, like... I don't know. I've gotten to express it all. I don't need to harbor a grudge. And that's not productive.
The other part is that we mention it, or I mention it more, but that we are on the same team. Like, we mentioned that also in conflict resolution discussions, yes, et cetera, as well. That it's just a good reminder to always have that, yeah, as long as it's true that what you are currently fighting for is not just pure yourself, but the partnership, then it should be also just thrown in there into the conversation that, like, we're on the same team. We're trying to figure this out here for the two of us together, right? Like, obviously, I want the best for you here, but we disagree on the method of getting there or something. Like, say it in any other way that works for you. But it's just helpful. Like, it's like some things are just worth saying, even though they're technically understood, just because when you are in an emotional state or in the heat or whatever, like, it's just like the mind could think of a million things. It just helps to throw a couple in that is good for it to have as an anchor.
Yeah.
What?
I'm just laughing. It's just funny.
Are there other challenges that you've had in your 10 years that you think other relationships can learn from, or other couples can?
So one we haven't actually used it as much recently because we just haven't needed to, but historically is because when you get into like a big disagreement, what's really going on is your limbic system has taken over, right? Or your whatever you want to call it, your lizard brain. You become more animalistic, and so we just developed a kind of signal to one another that whoever is the first to notice that we're in the like lizard, you know, screaming animal zone, goes to the other. One will do a hiss.
Wow.
And the other might not be ready to receive it, but just that first act of is like, it just adds this moment of consciousness where it's like, oh, we're in the hiss zone. And then usually after a few minutes, the other one will be like, and we'll just hiss back at one, you know, and it's, that's a good diffuser. So it's
very good because it's like the thing that it says is you're being unreasonable right now. You're being reactive, like a aggressive animal or something.
Well, no, it's not saying you're being wrong. It's just saying, correct. You're being an animal.
You're just being
the animal is in charge.
And like a feral animal, right, in this moment. But the point is, if you were to actually say that in words, then the human in feral animal zone will respond to it in some, like, again, aggressive action. And you can't respond anything to a hiss. Like, what are you going to respond to? Are you going to argue with a hiss? Like, no. So there is no argument, which really helps it because it's like, it also helps that it's not a safe word, but it's kind of the same concept as having a safe word. It's just something that both have agreed on. It kind of stands for something. So people can have whatever they want, I think, but it is useful to have something that both agree that kind of like is a pause to reflect on oneself.
Mm. Yeah. That's a good mental model. It's just so tough to sometimes realize that you're in this, or like, yeah, sort of, even if you hear the noise, to sort of like take a second to do that is not always easy. Yeah, it is interesting. I think you guys both have, it seems, remarkable self-control in the sense of if other couples tried doing the sort of like head on, have this direct conversation, it might not be as easy for other people.
Yeah. So I wonder about that. I wonder whether it's.
At the same time, there does need to be a place to let out, sort of.
Yeah. So I think, as we said, one different approaches work for different people, but I would assume that addressing more things directly should be on net better.
Yeah.
Or at least a little bit, just because reality, like working with reality is better than working against it. And working with more like clarity is better than working with uncertainty. Yeah. So that's what this achieves, the direct addressing, right? It's like we both get to find out what reality is. We both get to resolve uncertainty. We both reduce subtext. Like just reducing subtext really, really helps. And I think that couples would attempt to start maybe the not extremely controversial, but like medium controversial things to address a bit quicker with, I mean, the people have plenty of recommendations on it, but like making spaces for it or something or like starting off the conversation with this notion of, hey, maybe we are trying to resolve things faster now for the betterment of our team, of you and me. So let's try to do this. And if it doesn't work, then we'll just stop in 10 minutes. I don't know. Just something, I think it could work for more people.
do you guys have any rituals in your relationship that you think other couples should adopt or would benefit from?
So, I mean, we're both very naturally competitive people. You know, we met through a shared love of a game. We played games for a living. But there is something to the process of playing an actual competitive game against someone. I mean, it doesn't have to be competitive. You could play a collaborative game as well. But just game playing together is so good because it's like, you know, it's a shared puzzle that you're both trying to do, whether you're, you know, technically trying to beat the other or solve something together. At present, we're playing backgammon. So we'll make a coffee, sit down and play a game of backgammon before we start our day. And it's usually good because it's just, our love language is shit talking. And so we just get to shit talk each other and someone will win some units of time off the other because that's what we usually play for instead of money. And that's, I don't know, I found that a very like healthy, mm-hmm. useful ritual. Other ones that are good are just like going outside and going for a walk together for the first 10 minutes of the day. Just not going straight into phones. Usually like this, if we can start the day together in a like meaningful way, whether it's a game or going outside or doing some shared activity that's not straight into phone or straight into work, I tend to have a much better day.
Yeah.
I suppose actually that touches also on the thing that is really relevant for just a healthy relationship is that a thing that we in it. So in the past, I used to wonder whether our thing works in part so well because we happen to have had a life which had a lot of variety, and it's easier usually, right? When you have just constantly something new happen, things are exciting and fun, and it's just you don't fall into routine and annoyance as easily. That said, since we quit playing poker, which is now 5 years, it's been nearly 5 years ago. We've had much more of a routine-based life, and things didn't change since then in terms of our relationship, as it probably got better. So I now actually think that it's less the variety, it's more just, so like change of scenery definitely helps, but the thing that it achieves is that you kind of don't get into a personal rut or personal depressive zone or personal bad mind state. So as long as each person also maintains their own like psychological strength and like self-improvement necessarily, but just like
self-actualization.
Yeah, self-actualization. Then you bring fewer frustrations into the relationships, right? So like if you take care of yourself, you through that end up taking care of the relationship as well.
Right.
I think that's just very worth mentioning. Like each of us, like it would be very bad, even though we have a very strong relationship and kind of people even like when they start a group chat with us, they always call us Livgore instead of Liv and Igor, right? Like we're like a unit, but at the same time, it would be very bad if either of us started to truly just have the relationship as the main defining characteristic of themselves.
Yeah.
Like I would like immediately try to like at the same time push you slightly away and towards yourself. That started happening.
Yeah. One of the best books I ever read on relationships is this book called The Passion Trap, which talks about how this common theme between a lot of like long-term relationships that break down is that some kind of power differential emerges that wasn't there from the outset. I mean, even if it was there from the outset, but it like the power differential gets more and more and more, and that's such that it becomes toxic. So by power differential, it's often the case that you see with these bad relationships that one is more like, so like confident in themselves, one is perhaps, you know, things in their career or whatever, but they're feeling they tend to have more perceived power than the other over the like it, or security in the relationship itself, and this can then start to make the one who the one down, as they're called, feel, you know, because they're like, well, they're not happy in themselves, or, you know, they're not feeling like they're getting enough attention from their partner. They'll start like doing stuff to try and get more attention, which will make the one up then be feeling like, oh, you know, they'll start to feel almost like a resentment towards the one down because it's like they're being so needy. And this it creates these like vicious spirals where they get even further and further apart. And this like polarity gets even more entrenched. And so the book sort of describes about like what this, you know, the different ways that this dynamic can can emerge. And if anyone, I challenge anyone who's ever had a relationship that went wrong to read it and not identify with large parts of it, whether they were the one up in that moment or the one down. And a big way, you know, it's not possible necessarily to always have perfectly matched power. You know, maybe one does have a bigger career, or one makes more money, or one is better looking than the other, or one has, you know, whatever.
Actually, with certainty,
There's always going to be, but it doesn't matter if, you know, you were both comfortable in that from the outset.
Yeah.
Well, that's also usually it's like you're, say there are 12 important factors that each of you care about.
Right.
It shouldn't be the, like, if it's unlikely that your relationship began with you being 12 out of 12, better than the other at 12 out of 12. Most right. likely it's 9 out of 12 versus 3, and you really care about those other three parts or something. And it's just good to maintain and make the other person feel confident as well about the mm-hmm. other parts that they're good at. But the point, I think, like how that connected to the relationship hanging on is that, that person there that was in the one down in your description would potentially focus so much in the relationship that that's the defining piece about exactly. them, rather than
it becomes
focusing on themselves and growing themselves or like building out their own strength further, which certainly helps a relationship.
Because there's nothing usually less attractive to anyone, of whether they're male or female, than of having a partner where their entire thing is about your own, is the relationship of the two of you.
Yeah.
That's just no one like, you know, because it's not attractive to them. And then also the person who's in it, like they, even if they're self-aware of this, like it's, they don't feel good about themselves and so on. So it is really important to have something else going on. And it can be the other way as well. Like it's often...
I want to throw in, people will object to that, that it's like, I don't know, when it's all about the relationship. One, some people have different styles, but also you do not mean mothers, for example, that have maybe just given up their work and now just like totally focus on their child and the relationship, because they're focusing on
No, I was going to, if you interrupted me, but like my point was actually, it often goes the other way, where when perhaps parents, you know, they have their first children, the mother, often the men get into this weird, almost like one downy zone, because now before the woman was like kind of all their focus, you know, a lot of their focus was on them. And now they've got suddenly a lot less on them, because the woman has now got this very important job that she's doing, you know, additionally than before.
Attention differential happens.
Exactly. It actually often goes in the other direction. Yeah, yeah. You thought I was alluding.
No. I just wanted to rule out that people say that you're speaking against mothers focusing on motherhood or something. No, but that's absolutely not what you meant, is what I wanted to just highlight, because people like to hate on that. Okay, anyway.
How have you guys thought about children?
Yeah. We have 5 great embryos on ice.
Yeah,
amazing.
That's been one topic that has been actually a potential source of disagreement between us, because I'm more ready to turn those embryos into real humans than he is, and that's been an interesting thing to navigate. And for a little while,
it's been like six months.
I was not at all ready before, but I'd say like 6 months ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
but you guys have been together 10 years, you know.
Yeah, but that's how in sync we were. Like,
right.
I had never seen myself as potentially being a mother. Never appealed to me. I was, as a kid, it like literally repulsed me, the idea. Like, a lot of my female friends would have dolls and like they were very nurturing, and I was like, I hate dolls.
Wow.
Give me my toy plane and my toy car and let me smash the doll with them. That was literally my behavior as a child.
And what changed?
Well, I did ayahuasca, and there was a big theme there of like imagining myself as a mother and seeing how beautiful that would be. So that was real, real big one. But also, I think I was just slower to mature in that regard. I think it's a thing that not all, but most women want to do at some point. And for me, it took a lot, lot longer than most. A lot of my female friends knew they wanted to be mothers from a very young age, or the idea became appealing in their 20s or early 30s. For me, it literally wasn't until my late 30s.
Hmm.
Luckily, we made embryos just sort of as an insurance policy 5 years ago.
Hmm. Wow.
I also, since fairly young, thought that I wouldn't have children. I don't know how it got there, but somehow that was the result of my like adolescence that I ended up with the belief that, oh, why I don't need to have children. So I'm also only coming around. It's been a progressive trend towards like, oh, maybe I should have children over the last like 10, 20 years, basically. Mm. Yeah. But initially, when we started our relationship, I was still actually only 10 years here, because when we started, I was pretty sure it's like, oh, no,
we were both
never want to get married and I don't want to have children. I was like,
we were
lucky to meet each other, because you're like, how many people?
It totally worked. We were now both we're very together changing kind of our approach. And
but that was interesting that, like, you know, for me, it came a little bit sooner than you, like only a few months. But that was interesting to observe that there was actually this potentially slightly, you know, fraught topic.
Yeah.
Of, but then, yeah, we just
that was
had
the one topic we have discussed the least well together, yes. Frankly. I mean, in part also because we had the insurance policy probably and thought that we're, but still, like, the question of when we, like, unfreeze them, is we that's probably the topic we handled the least well.
Yeah.
Because it's just too stressful to, like, to even imagine.
I don't know, maybe. It could very well be. It was a couple of friends not too long ago, like a few months ago, that helped us nudge towards it and then pointed out that, like, what's going on here? Like, wait, you guys have discussed it this little so far? You out of all people?
Right. Right.
And we were also stunned by it, by our own, like, our how own much ignorance. We had blocked it.
Yeah, there was, like, definitely a mental block. So it was really, it was that took having close friends who knew us both to point out and be like, you right. okay, Livgo? And we were like, whoa.
We're not perfect at the direct addressing of everything. No.
And so they nudged you because they were like, hey, you guys are going to want this. You're getting older.
No, they just
wanted us to know for ourselves.
Right. They noticed a surprising lack of clarity between us. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, like, we were kind of like clearly slightly uncomfortable talking about the topic because we hadn't sat down and just done the hard conversation we needed to have. And which was probably extra jarring because we love sitting down and having hard conversations with each other.
Right. And so how did you get there or even get closer to it? Did Liv sort of persuade you or did you?
I think it's kind of it's mainly, in fact, actually, that a bunch of friends had children.
Yeah,
I see them. Right. And
grade life. Yeah,
they're kind of like, I mean, I don't really know what to talk to about to a 1 or 2 year old yet. Like, I don't know. I can't really hold a long conversation with them, frankly. So I'm still a little confused by that notion. But I
those are other people's children. You haven't had the biology hack. Once you have the biology hack, it'll your brain will just
there is that. But also, I definitely like 3, 4, 5, 6 year olds. Like I as a teenager, I used to like teach magic to like little children and did like a couple of other classes and worked at anyway, just like various things with little children at the time, which was like in a teaching capacity. And I enjoyed it. I like kids. Obviously, they're awesome. But somehow it just, there was an assumption of how much time it would take away from other things. I now see kind of more possibility to do it with less time being taken away. And then people are like, oh, that sounds selfish. I think that's a stupid point because it's like, it's selfish either way. You're having kids for yourself as well. You're not having a child for the person that doesn't exist. That's a silly notion. And then I was always in the past convinced of the points that, like, if you wanted to do it for society, like, there are other, just like the same amount of time and effort you can contribute in other ways to society. Much more, in fact. I still think that. But I think it's so then there's maybe duty. Duty could be a feeling. In a world where we have like falling birth rates, there is definitely a thing to, hey, forget the whole like, could you do this in other ways? It's just like lead by example make sense around that. I accept that as a reason as well. But yeah, the main thing definitely is that I just see a lot of children around in my from my friends. And frankly, it would just be the best time to have children is at the same time with your friends, for sure.
Yeah.
One of the things that apparently always happens when you have children is, and you have it at a different time than your friends, then you end up hanging out a lot with the parents of your child's friends, which is basically a random selection of people. And now that's who you hang out with instead of just your friends. So like, are you making your children have your your friends' children as friends, or are they making you choose friends? It's like, you're the better choice maker here. You're in your 30s or something and they're one.
Yeah, that makes sense. Some people say that every marriage is made anew 7 years in or something, or every 7 years is like a new marriage. What can you say about the longevity? Has it felt that you guys have like reinvented yourselves, or you've just grown together, or is there anything noteworthy to say about
the 7 year thing,
or just the being together for so long relative to people who've been together for like 3 years or something? They say the first couple years might be like honeymoon or something.
Yeah, I mean, you obviously the honeymoon phase of the first couple of years will eventually wear off, where it's not just like all we're gonna do is have sex all day long or whatever. It's not, you know, that does change. But it like, it's more than made up for through the like the deepening bonds and just like enjoyment of each other. I found like when you're with someone who is your match.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's so hard to separate out the simultaneous thing that's happening, especially for someone in their like 20s or going into their 30s, of just like you are also maturing as a person. And so like how much of the changes that happen in a relationship for the better or worse are because you are just like maturing as a person and getting more life experiences and greater perspectives and greater wisdom.
Yeah, it probably depends mostly on just various life circumstance changes, I would imagine. Those are real step changes versus like other gradual stuff. Like us both quitting the traveling poker life and moving more to a stay, like work from home or
be in one place life
was a somewhat relevant change. The much more relevant one will obviously be having children. Otherwise, but yeah, even the, so the prior one, the that we stayed at home, that didn't really change that much in our dynamic. I think the only so far relevant step-ish change was the kind of ending of the honeymoon phase, which is not just about sex. It's also about, right?
Go on.
I'm now wondering, like, isn't it main, like there is some amount of time it takes to really get to know the other partner.
Right.
It like after 3 months, you don't really know them. Like the best friend or like a good friend still knows that person better than like the new partner of 3 or 6 months knows this person.
Right. No, I think that's true, but that didn't apply to us because we had the whole 2-3 years of friendship prior. Like we knew each other
to know a lot of sides of you, of like, because we didn't have the same conflicts, for example, right? Like before. And initially you brought your, like a couple of your prior patterns, as I also brought some of my prior patterns, but I'm noting yours in particular because they were worse, into the relationship about, well, because, you just had a different style of, conflict resolution with your prior partners.
Throwing shit at you.
Yeah, for example.
You threw shit at him.
Sometimes. I would say I have more of an explosive temper.
Yeah.
And it's not like a violent temper, but I used to throw stuff more.
I don't recall you throwing stuff.
And so did you ever, you just accept the temper, or were you ever like, hey, stop being so angry at me?
So, I mean, one thing we do discuss, again, when stuff bubbles up is whether that I at least try to track is the intensity of the, like, that is brought to the topic commensurate with what the topic actually stands for within the relationship. And when it's not, then we do point out to each other, and she does the same to me, of like, are you like, is it about something else, like what else has happened, like why are you so upset, or like, it's just, and that is often true, and it might not be that immediately, oh no, you were right, but rather like 2-3 minutes later, you're just much calmer about the topic, because you do actually, in the background, while you're still maybe like fuming about this topic, you're in the back of your mind, you start thinking about what else is the actual,
what are the contributing factors that have got to this, this state?
That definitely helps. The other thing is also that yeah, you early told you, like, when you had a bit more of just like you felt like things were intense when they weren't. I pointed out to you that you just don't get to have that many important things in a month. Like, it's right. Just like, that's just not that many things that happen in your life that are that big.
You don't get to have a meltdown, you know, exactly. There just aren't enough meltdown worthy things in a month to justify the number of meltdowns that you're having. And that, again, in the moment is not what I wanted to hear.
Right.
But upon reflection, I was like, this makes sense. Yeah. And it was actually really helpful framing.
So you guys are open to being tone policed if it's like, if you're right.
Yeah, I mean for sure, because we just don't want to live in a household where like the tone is sucks or the atmosphere sucks. We just both want to have a fun atmosphere.
Yeah,
I mean, the word tone policing is used as a, not that you'd meant it in this way right now, but like it's sometimes used as a like this perfect like weapon that just says, oh, you don't get to do that thing. But in reality, it's if someone is reacting with a 9.5 out of 10 intensity level to having lost a parking spot, something it is better for them to be told by their friends or partner that this is bad.
this is
not good for their own life. If like they you want to bring the relative intensity then to the relatively more important things as well.
and you just
don't have that much space for
what it really is just an exercise in giving, helping the others get a greater perspective or a different perspective that can be also useful. And I think that's maybe been one of our, even though it's not a consciously stated goal, it feels like it's kind of an unconscious undercurrent that we're always trying to like empower the other one to see a greater perspective about a particular thing. Whatever it is.
Is there anything we haven't covered about things that make you special or things that you guys have learned or things that you've invented that you think would benefit other couples or people looking to have fulfilling relationships?
I think actually the last thing you just touched on a little bit of the empowerment. We talked about it before in terms of that the thing that really helps a relationship to sustain fully be good is self-actualization of the individuals. But kind of the thing that relates to it that is also important is that you want to continuously empower the other. Like we actually do spend decent amount of effort or in our communication or just like how we are with each other in truly just wanting to help the other be better able to make choices for themselves. And that comes from the internal belief, which makes it easier, but it comes from this internal belief that the other like building, well, one, the other building their best life for themselves and being able to do that will just be good for them, but that you will inevitably be part of it if you're also great, because then they want to be with you. So yeah, it's a thing that I honestly can look back at and just like point at like quite a few things internally of like, oh yeah, I was made better through her nudging me in various ways, even including things which I might get annoyed about in the moment sometimes, like, oh no, she actually nudges me to be a better version of myself. And that's great.
Some people come into relationships with this very zero sum mindset of like, well, if I empower them, then they're going to become more powerful than me and that's going to take power away from me. But it's like, if you're both working towards a mutual goal, which is, let's say, you know, improving the world or building something cool, or even as simple as like building a healthy, long-lasting relationship, then you're already in alignment. And so empowering the other one is just further empowering your own stuff, your own goals. And for, you know, if... Yeah, I wonder if some people, and I'm trying to just think back to like previous relationships I had, which weren't as good. Maybe I don't think I've ever seen where I thought, you know, them doing well was in any way like negatively impacting me. But I think some people do just truly like they see that because they don't feel confident enough in themselves or something like that. So, I mean, it ties back to this whole thing. Like I do believe you do have to have a minimum threshold of self-confidence in order to have a healthy relationship. And I've often sort of advised friends who are like, should I stay with this person and so on? It's like your cup is so empty. You can't, even if this person was a perfect fit for you, it's still going to be a bad relationship because your cup is not sufficiently full. You have to feel good about yourself first. And if you're trying to get it from another person or from a relationship, that it's never going to work.
Yeah.
So yeah, like empowering the other to be the best version of themselves is always going to be the best thing for you as well, because it's just assuming you're working roughly in the same direction. It doesn't have to be perfect overlap. You can work on different things. But yeah, I mean, it's literally my favorite quote of all time is by Forrest Landry, which is love is that which enables choice.
Mm.
So a loving act is one which enables, this is how I interpret it. A loving act is one that enables others to make the best choices for themselves.
What does that mean?
That
what's an example or
that you, it kind of includes the notions of like that you're treating the other as an individual, mainly the notion that like you're treating the other as an individual that is free to make their own choices, and you just want them, like loving them means helping them be the best kind of most actualized version of themselves that they want themselves to be. Like you want to help them make choices, not any choice that you
want them to.
Yeah, like you're not out of the possibility of their choices. You're not restricting anything. You're just empowering their ability to decide within it, to analyze it better, to like have more time to think about it, like something around this direction, which just enables them to choose better. Yeah,
I think it's even deeper than that. You're not only trying to empower their own choice making ability, but you also want to increase, to a degree at least, the range of choices available to them. I think it's kind of both.
Yeah, totally.
But if you had to pick one to focus your energy on, then probably just empowering them, their own rational decision making faculties.
Yeah.
I think, certainly one of the biggest things.
I think the other part is as important, actually. Yeah, the helping shape the environment such that
they have more optionality, more options available to them, and then the better capabilities to sift through them.
Right.
Because if I think about what one of the greatest gifts you've given me throughout our relationship is you've just helped me become more rational in the highest sense of the word, in terms of you let me be as emotional and weird and wild as I want, but you make me feel as free as possible, but you at the same time teach me how to understand myself as best possible. Just
cool. Yeah. I'm happy for you.
And presumably that's happened to you too.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What has been my greatest gift to you? I want to know.
I'm a much happier person than I would be without you. And I am definitely more, I think I've made much better choices than I would have without you as well. She wants more.
I'm just doing the interview tactic of staying quiet and see if you want to add anything else.
If I want to add anything else.
I'm satiated. I just wonder if you want to.
I don't know. This is what came out after 5 seconds of thinking. If I think more, maybe more.
I have to say you're doing very well. Igor just is coming off the back of 5 days in bed of flu.
Yeah.
Great. You're functioning. You're on a solid 80%.
Right.
When people pick the wrong match, why did they do that? Or when you talk to your friends and you're like, okay, you're clearly or this is not the right.
It's definitely a very difficult line to walk as a friend.
Right.
Where you feel like a person that your friend chose is not a good match. And do you address it? Do you let them find it out? What's the threshold from which you start now talking about it and making a point of it? In fact, actually addressing it mildly is what many people do, I think. Hey, how is the new guy? It's like, oh yeah, I saw him do this thing. Like, was that okay? It's like, oh no, he just blah, 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 blah. Okay, yeah. And that's it. Like a mild thing, I think a number of people do. But then what the thing that I think happens fairly frequently is that people actually have a fairly strong opinion about it, but never expressed a strong opinion. Like the amount of people that actually express a strong opinion about a bad match is, I would imagine, like under 3% even in terms of direct mentioning it to friends. Probably it should be higher. Probably like it's just happened to basically everyone who ends up breaking up. Pretty much everyone says, oh, I wish it happened faster.
Yeah.
And in very many cases also, especially in short relationships, it's like, oh, I should have known this or something, right? So like out of the set of short relationships, at least, probably a lot of them, like friends may have seen, and it would have been good if it was addressed. For long relationships, probably there were incredible parts that worked well, which is why they lasted long in the initial years, right? They worked well in the initial years. In any case, it's like, yeah, how do you address it? I don't know, but like I think we set our thresholds too high, basically. I think people only address stuff nowadays if it's like direct, like physical abuse or something,
right.
or like direct emotional abuse. That is just,
and even
like,
then people just don't say it.
But then still friends are like usually like, hey, you can't let that happen to yourself, I think is a thing that people would do. But it's just that's way too high a bar. I think there's like lower bars where it's just this is like you're clearly falling into the same pattern that you had with another person before, and this is not gonna lead to good relationship as it has in the past, is actually something I think that should be brought up to a friend. And I've seen that recently happen with a friend who was very, very good at it. And he brought it up to another friend of ours, and it like really shook him out of it. It's like, no, you have to get out of this relationship. It's really not working for you. And
but it was
we
quite
were there for the conversation. It was really...
Yeah, it was quite jarring to see, just because like the social norm is to be like, let them discover for themselves, ask, perhaps offer leading questions to see if they get there, but you shouldn't get involved. Right. I don't know. Like, I think I feels like if we can try and quantify this, it feels like right now, at least certainly on like most of the circles of people I know, the current like level of intervention is like a 2 out of 10, and maybe it should be something at least like a 5.
Yeah.
And something I'm sympathetic like to the idea that people feel like they don't want to pressure someone into making, like they should be making their own decision. That's usually the underlying reason for why they don't address it. But it's actually not a good reason for the, well, sorry, it is a good reason, but it is incorrect to think that only because you addressed it really strongly, now they all of a sudden don't make their own decision anymore. They will still make their own decision afterwards.
But now they
always make their own decision. In fact, what you're doing is you're not being upfront about your feelings. So they have a worse model of reality yet again. And that's why I think it's just not right. Like if you have a belief that is you strongly hold and you don't express it to your friend, you're actually doing them a bit of a disservice, I think.
Yeah. I would agree with that. And it could be if your sort of cultural norms are so like, no, you mustn't get involved, maybe just the way to like have the conversation is like, I have some strong opinions on your relationship. Would you like to hear them?
Yeah.
And so you've like pre-warned them, like, I have strong opinions. Would you like to hear them? And now you're giving them the choice. Would you like this information or not?
Yeah.
And it's an opt-in or it's an opt-out. You're not just going to force it and be like, call the phone. I think blah, blah, blah sucks. You should break up with them.
Right.
No.
And you could also
give them the option. You know, and you can pre-warn it. Like, I have very strong opinions, or I have a moderate opinion, but I want to explore it with you.
With strong
confidence. With potentially large consequences.
Yeah. But again, in the end... You're not gonna like hold the person by the hand.
Yeah,
you're not making the decision for them.
Yeah. You're typing the message for them, or like having the conversation with the partner for them. No, they'll have to do it, so they get to decide always.
Provided that you are being, if you generally have a relationship where you view that person as someone who you love, your friend you love, and you are coming at this from a place of good friendshipness, not because you just like want, you don't like that you don't see them as much anymore. Because that can be the difficulty sometimes, is that friends are like, well, like they're so in love, I never see them. So they can't, this person can't be good because they've taken them away from their friends. It's like, that can be sometimes a great.
It's also hard because you don't have perfect data. So
no.
Yeah, you think you know.
Right. And that's why.
And they only come to you when things are bad often. And so.
Yeah. But like, I mean, I remember when I was in a really bad relationship and, I just couldn't get myself out of it. And it was only one of my friends who knew us both. And she sat me down at one point. And she was like, very strongly, she was like, why the fuck are you in this? Like, this relationship makes you miserable. You don't like each other. you don't have the guts to break up. What are you doing? And I still didn't actually listen to her advice. I didn't break up for like another few months, but I've never forgotten it. And
well, it may also have, did it nudge you potentially by a couple of months earlier than otherwise?
I don't know. I don't even know if it did that much, but it stuck in my head. It must have done, it must have had some impact, but I'm to this day, and I'm not very good at remembering conversations in general, but her words, like the literal, the whole scene and her, the conversation, like is etched in my brain. And I remember, you know, I respect her so much for that because she didn't pussyfoot around. And she gave me her honest opinion. I think society, like friendships, would benefit more from people being more honest and ask your friends more. Like, yeah. What do you think of this person? Actually, be honest. I'm not gonna.
Yeah.
I might not listen to what you have to say. Don't judge me if you tell me that you don't like them and I still stay with them. But I want to know your opinion.
And a check on whether you should bring up the opinion for like any friend considering it potentially. A decent check to do is. Do you frequently have strong opinions about other people's relationship or specifically about that person's relationships? If the answer is no, then it's a sign that it's a relevant opinion. Yeah. If the answer is yes, then maybe shut your mouth.
Yeah.
You should, you know, it's okay to have friends who are busybodies, but just be aware that they are.
Right. Only mindful of time. Is there anything we haven't gotten to that you want to make sure that we end this up?
This has been awesome.
Maybe one last question we'll wrap on is when you think about sort of the future for your relationship or the vision, does like family and grandkids first thing come in mind? Probably not because you haven't thought about kids until recently. When you think about sort of the next few decades, like how do you think about your relationship and how it evolve?
I think for us, we're so like in the weeds with the AI world and there's so much uncertainty.
So you're like even just
over years. The next 5 years, like I don't know. I truly struggle to see beyond the next 5 year time horizon.
I mean, hopefully
so much uncertainty.
Uploaded ever after with like gazillions of copies on oneself, living both in the cloud and on Earth at the same time. And just
doing all the
traveling
things
to
how do you think about especially having kids in a world that, you know, things might go haywire in a few years.
It's definitely, it definitely weighs on my mind.
Are you like, gotta have them now before things get crazier?
I don't think that plays that big a role. I think people make too big a point of like the world's going into some direction they believe. And usually in the past, they were always wrong. I think AI is different. But in any case, it's like, if I think of like childhoods, being three is awesome. It's like, so even if you were of the belief that I think is wrong, that like climate change is going to destroy the world in 10 years entirely. It's like, so you're, children are gonna have 10 awesome years as children in a super great world. Like what's to work? What's bad about that? It's like they won't have an adulthood. It's like great. That's they don't have to work. they get to have pure childhood. It's awesome.
Cool. Well, Liv Gore, thank you so much for coming on our podcast. It's been great.
Pleasure. Thanks for having us. This was fun.
Yeah, it was good.
Thanks for listening to Modern Relationships. Please make sure you're following on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. If you have a chance, leave us a review or comment on this episode to let me know who else you'd like to hear from on this show. Modern Relationships is a podcast from Turpentine, the network behind Econ 102, Upstream, and Turpentine VC.